So pleased to have with us now from Pro Football Talk, NBC, the one and only Mike Florio. Mike, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Vic, it's always great to be with you, buddy.
Well, Mike, a lot of attention this week to the matchup that has Kyle Orton facing his former team, the Broncos, and maybe coming in with a pretty big chip on his shoulder, getting a chance to demonstrate that he would be the better guy, now that he's playing for the Chiefs, the better guy than Tim Tebow.
Yeah, the prodigal son returns, but not under the circumstances anyone in Denver had envisioned. They let the guy walk away. This falls under the heading of no good deed goes unpunished. He wanted out. They let him go. He entered the waivers process. The Chiefs claimed him. And now he comes back in week 17 with designs on knocking the Broncos out. And it's funny, Vic, because for weeks, John Elway, the director of football operations in Denver, was very cool about Tim Tebow. Now Elway needs Tebow. Elway needs Tebow to save Elway. Because if this blows up on the Broncos, Elway's going to get the blame for it. So they need Tebow to step up and win this game and deliver the AFC West title and not be in a situation where anyone's asking as of next Sunday night, why in the world did we let Kyle Orton go?
Yeah, it's a game that really puts more pressure clearly on the Broncos than it does on Kyle Orton, right? I mean, he comes in there and, you know, all he has to do is play a game. If it doesn't work out for him, okay, it didn't work out for him. He changed sort of horses in mid-race. But if it doesn't work out for the Broncos, they're the ones that would end up looking the worst in this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Chiefs are dangerous because they have nothing to lose. There are players on that team that would very much like to see Romeo Crennel, the former Browns coach, become the permanent Chiefs coach instead of the interim Chiefs coach. And you just throw everything into a vat and stir it up, and it spells potential trouble for the Broncos, and they're just going to have to find a way to pull this one out, or there will be some issues that resonate into the offseason. And if Tebow plays like he did in Buffalo, and it was just an ugly spectacle from Tebow, you'd have to think that he'll be on a somewhat shorter leash in 2012. He's going to get the full offseason to improve. But if he struggles early into September, October of next year, you could see the Broncos start thinking about going in a different direction.
We've already seen several coaching changes in the league this season, or multiple coaching changes, and now that we get down to week 17, that story angle intensifies, and I guess the one place where the spotlight on that will shine the brightest is Sunday night, the final regular season game of 2011 when the Cowboys take on the Giants. Your thoughts on what the implication of the outcome could mean to both the coaching staffs, Mike?
Well, I think that the losing coach really does have to be concerned. In New York, Tom Coughlin, I have a feeling, is going to get another one-year extension. That's what the Giants did last year when he would have been a lame duck in 2011. They did a little one-year Band-Aid because you could never be a lame duck head coach in that market. It would be too big of a distraction. You have to either give him an extension or move on. I think they'd give him a short-term extension, even if they fail to get there. But there'll be plenty of reason to look at the third straight season in which a promising start evaporated completely and say it's time to make a change. And I think all the while Bill Cowher is going to be sitting there watching and waiting, because I think that's the job he's going to wait for. For the Cowboys, Jerry Jones, the owner, has said Jason Garrett's his guy, but he said Wade Phillips is his guy, and he said once upon a time he wasn't going to cut Terrell Owens. So Jerry Jones reserves the right to change his mind at any time. And if I was Jones, and if I don't make it and I miss it by one game, I have a hard time forgetting about the play calling in the second half of the Lions game after the Cowboys were up by over 20 points and they kept throwing the ball, and that really set the stage for an epic collapse. And I'd go back to that Cardinals game with the gross mismanagement of the timeouts and then calling a timeout that created the perception that Jason Garrett was icing his kicker. It'd be hard to get past that. With Jeff Fisher out there, I wouldn't be shocked if Jerry Jones decides to swap out Garrett for Fisher.
There are several other places, of course, Mike, in the same category where there'll be a lot of attention for the potential for change. San Diego, where there's Norv Turner sitting on a pretty hot seat there. Tampa Bay, Raheem Morris. The Rams, Steve Spagnuolo. Indianapolis, Jim Caldwell. All of those situations are going to clearly get some attention. And another name I'm just going to – I don't know that he belongs on this list at all, but just because of the way things have been unfolding with the Jets – something there. If it's not Rex Ryan, certainly issues have come up with Brian Schottenheimer as offensive coordinator. But on that list I just ran down, what are your thoughts?
Well, the four that you mentioned initially, San Diego, Tampa Bay, St. Louis, and Indianapolis, I think in all four cities the coach gets fired. Rex Ryan raises an intriguing point, not necessarily because he's on the hot seat now, but when would he be on the hot seat? Would it be next year? Would it be the following year? At some point, the act is going to wear thin. At some point, the 53 men in the locker room, his primary audience, are going to start rolling their eyes when he does his chest-thumping routine. And with all that said, Vic, there's a way this all plays out, and the Jets make it back into the postseason as the sixth seed, and they go to Houston, and they win in the wild card round, and then they go back to New England, where they upset the Patriots last year when the Patriots were the number one seed. So they could luck into this thing and find themselves bouncing up to the AFC title game again, which will table all of these tough questions for at least a year. And I think the toughest question of all, apart from Brian Schottenheimer, the offensive coordinator, is what do you do with Mark Sanchez, the quarterback? He's got 2 years left under contract. At what point do you start looking? And I'm told that they are going to start considering their alternatives with Mark Sanchez.
Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk and NBC. Of course, you see him on Football Night in America, and you will on Sunday night. When we look at the rest of, you mentioned Tom Brady, and you look at the rest of this playoff picture that we also talk about, that gets interesting at least when there are some lingering injuries of quarterbacks. Ben Roethlisberger for the Steelers still trying to battle his way back from an upper ankle sprain, a high ankle sprain. How does that affect him going forward? And now Tom Brady sitting out of practice today with a shoulder injury. What do you know about that, and how concerned should the Patriots and their fans be?
Well, the key is it's his non-throwing shoulder, and I don't think there's any strong belief at this point that he won't play. There was some discrepancy about whether and to what extent he practiced today. I have a feeling he's going to be officially listed as limited in practice, but all indications are he'll play. And one of the most intriguing subplots, Vic, of this weekend is whether or not a record that lasted for 27 years, the single-season passing yardage mark, will last only 6 days. Because Tom Brady is 190 yards behind Drew Brees. And if the Saints, Sean Payton, reel Drew Brees in at all, that could be the opening Tom Brady needs to take that thing. So it could be Dan Marino from 1984 to December 26th of 2011, and then Tom Brady January 1 of 2012. I mean, it would just be amazing if it plays out that way.
That is really a scenario. And since you brought that up, too, about Brees, the conversation about MVP or league MVP, and I always know that there's always that backup plan of whoever doesn't get the MVP can always be the offensive player of the year. So what's your take on Aaron Rodgers, who I would think is the hands-down MVP of the league, but then you've got Drew Brees, and we give him the offensive player of the year award, or do you flip-flop it, or what do you want to do there?
Yeah, and I still don't understand how, if you're an offensive player – who is deemed to be the most valuable in the league based upon your performance on offense, how are you not also the offensive player of the year? But I think it's kind of a loose, unwritten way to acknowledge two guys. And I think it would be, as it was in 2008, Drew Brees, when he came within 15 yards of Dan Marino's single-season record, he was the offensive player of the year. And someone else, I can't remember who it was, but it may have been Peyton Manning, was the MVP. So I think something similar will happen. But I'll tell you this. If the way the dust settles on Week 17, Vic, is the Patriots with the number one seed, and if Brady ends up taking that record, and people take an honest look at the roster of the Packers and the roster of the Patriots and look at what Aaron Rodgers has had to work with and what Tom Brady has had to work with, you may see some people decide to shift toward Tom Brady. That's still not maybe enough to close the gap under the AP's 50 voters, one vote per person approach.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be closer than the 45-5 that everyone is expecting at this point.
Pro Bowl snubs are always fun topics to talk about, and that's been the topic of the week after the Pro Bowl selections. Although, you know, for generally speaking, I look at it, and a lot of I think a lot of the voting got it right, but it seemed to be some hard feelings among the Houston Texans, and particularly Brian Cushing, that he was left out.
Well, and I think the more upsetting thing coming out of Houston is the fact that none of the offensive linemen made it to the Pro Bowl. And the reality is, offensive line, typically it's reputation and name recognition. And once you make it as a left tackle like Joe Thomas, now Joe Thomas had another good year, you have to have a pretty bad year before you fall out of that. And, right. and I think one of the always fun things about when they get the Pro Bowl rosters together, they don't have anybody play left to play right tackle. All the tackles are left tackle.
Right.
And it's like, okay, who's going to play right tackle? But the Texans, I think, really got snubbed when it comes to the offensive line. With Cushing, the answer's obvious. Once you have that scarlet letter of a four-game suspension for a positive steroids test, that is hard to live down. And I think that had a lot to do with it. And even though he shifted inside and had a good year, and maybe you could make the argument persuasively that he deserves it, he is going to have to live with that steroid suspension for a long time.
Mike, one of my favorite parts of Fox's broadcast of the NFL is watching Mike Pereira when they go to him and you get his ruling on a controversial call or a close call or something, again, that you just want to hear from an expert, a guy who was in that position of head of officiating for the league previously and just kind of a unique, ideal media role that he has. But now he steps it up to writing a column for Fox Sports' website, ripping John Gruden and basically saying, you know, calling him a blowhard and John the broadcaster now, but clearly spewing a little bit of venom, if you will, from him, from Mike Pereira not really liking the guy who was always after the officials, I guess, as a coach. What do you make of that story?
Well, I'll tell you, my first reaction was, Vic, I wonder what kind of conversations these guys had when Gruden was a head coach and Pereira was the VP of officiating, because I think there's more of a backstory to this than anyone realizes. And secondly, this is kind of an inside baseball slant on the whole thing. Folks get very sensitive when someone with one network criticizes publicly someone with another network. And I'll tell you this, a couple of years ago, I criticized Joe Buck because I thought he was disinterested at best in that epic Packers-Cardinals wild card game, which had an Arena League final score. And I heard from people at Fox who thought that because I'm now affiliated with NBC, I have an obligation not to call out people from other networks. Well, I hope those same people are asking the same questions internally as it relates to the decision to post a column from a Fox employee criticizing openly and very vehemently and strongly an ESPN employee. Because if that's the standard, if the standard that they had tried to apply to me is the standard, they need to apply it in-house, too.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. And that's really a different kind of take and an interesting...
I probably shouldn't even said that.
But,
well. But I've probably written about it at some point on my website. Because it's like, hey, you know, I think you call it like you see it. And if people don't like it, that's their problem.
That's always been your way, Mike. So
that's
why you are who you are. Mike, thank you so much for the great breakdown. And we look forward to talking with you down the line.
All right, Vic, Happy New Year, buddy.
He is Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk and from NBC. You catch him on Football Night in America. Great website, of course, Pro Football Talk. Always check that out. And we've got much more coming up on Cleveland Browns Daily. It's driven by Liberty Ford and brought to you by Madden NFL 12 in stores now. EA Sports, it's in the game.